Money FM 89.3. Best of breakfast. The U.S. Market Update with Money FM 89.3.
Welcome to the U.S. Markets Wrap. I'm Sean Cheong. The S&P 500 slipped for a fifth straight day, registering its longest losing streak since last October. The broad index lost more than 0.2% to 5,011 points. This week has also seen a trend whereby for each day this week, the S&P 500 rallied into the green at one point during the trading session, only to give up that gain before the close. Meanwhile, the Nasdaq Composite dropped more than 0.5% to 15,601 points, and the Dow Jones Industrial Average added 0.06% to finish at 37,775 points, still closing just above its flat line for 2024. So for more insights, we are joined by Brenda Vingello, the Chief Investment Officer, Sandhill Global Advisors. Hello, Brenda.
Hello, thanks for having me.
So, could Wall Street be mistaken, Brenda, in the hope that a recent uptick in inflation is an irregularity as opposed to a longer and more worrying trend?
Well, I think we have to look at why inflation has been, or the parts of inflation story where we still need to see improvement. And it's really on the services side, and that is driven by wage growth. And then the other piece is on the housing side. So first, to start off on the services, we have started to see wage growth moderate a little bit. There has been a huge influx of immigrants into the United States, and what we've seen recently is that a lot of those immigrants are filling lower wage positions, so it's putting less pressure on wages in that particular category, and it's that low wage category that's seen the most inflation. So since 2019, in aggregate, that lower wage positions are up about 37% since 2019, but we are starting to see that moderate. So I think that as time goes on, we will likely see less of an impact from wage growth, and that should serve to slow services growth. The other component of housing is one where a lot of the figures, both PCE and CPI, are showing figures for housing that don't seem to match what we're seeing in reality. So they're showing that housing is up much more than it actually is. But I think as time goes on and as there is more turnover in housing and rental units, we will start to see that converge with what we're actually seeing in reality, which is that housing is increasing around 2 to 3% a year in terms of price. So I do think that as time goes on, we are going to see more of an improvement in inflation, but it is proving to be slow at this stage. And I think on the other hand, you know, the U.S. economy is very strong. So consumption is there. Services inflation is high, but people are still spending money on services. But I can say that nobody is happy about how high prices are, but people are still paying them. So that's the other component, is that the strength of the economy is really not doing anything to help the situation on the inflation front. But I do think even in a strong economy, we can continue to see improvement in services and housing, which are the two areas where we need to see it most.
Brenda, let's take a look at the currency markets, which has been quite strong for the US dollar. And the US has acknowledged that Japan and South Korea have serious concerns about the recent sharp depreciation in the yen and the won. All three sides agreeing to consult closely on foreign exchange market developments. What kind of effects might we see there?
Well, it's hard, especially when you have in the U.S., where we now know or have priced into the market that the Fed may only lower interest rates two times this year. So that is creating a much higher interest rate environment, higher for longer interest rate environment in the United States, which has contributed to the strength of the dollar. I would also argue that maybe some of the geopolitical environment is contributing to strength of the dollar as well, as kind of a flight, a little bit of a flight to safety. But that would be another reason, right, for the Fed to potentially consider lowering interest rates this year, even if the U.S. economy remains healthy, would be to help support foreign currencies, and because it's that interest rate differential that really has driven the strength of the dollar more recently. So a strong dollar is certainly not good for everyone, especially U.S. multinational companies, which represent a gigantic part of our investable stock market. So I think there are more entities out there that would love to see the dollar weaken a little bit outside of just Japan and South Korea, but remains to be seen exactly how this can be done because Japan could begin to intervene, but it's costly to do so to try to prop up the yen.
And now that the bond market is pricing in just 1 to 2 hikes this year, Do you think that they have the potential to generate positive returns?
I do. So, you know, we've gone from one extreme to a bit of another just in a very short period of time. We're at the beginning of this year. The bond market was pricing in 6 rate cuts, which we felt was very unrealistic. And now here we are with only 1 to 2 priced in, which we think is a much more realistic scenario. So we also have a period where we think the equity market could be more volatile. You know, we had a very strong first quarter. We trimmed equity for all of our clients in mid-March in favor of adding a little bit to bonds. But now that bonds are really pricing in a much more reasonable scenario for interest rates, we think that bonds have become more attractive. So certainly have had disappointing returns year to date, being down slightly, but I think that could certainly change as the rest of the year unfolds.
Okay, let's talk now about small cap stocks, Brenda. They appear to be on the verge of a negative technical trend. Is a breakout on the horizon, and when might that happen?
Well, I think more recently they've been hurt by this higher for longer interest rate environment that we're coming to terms with in terms of, and a lot of people had bought small cap, you know, with the assumption that small cap would begin acting better as interest rates were coming down. But there's another dynamic that's begun recently that I think could be a positive for small caps, and that is the IPO market in the United States has begun to perk up. The other thing, so small cap stocks, many of them need to do secondary stock offerings or find some other way of raising capital in order to continue to grow. And so to the extent that we also see the market open up a little bit for secondary stock offerings, that could certainly be a positive for small cap stocks. So we aren't throwing in the towel yet with small cap stocks and think there is still opportunity there. Valuation's very low, but we have seen a bit of a correction here more recently. This is, I think, those investors who are counting on rate cuts as part of their investment thesis have begun to reduce exposure.
And I'm sure that there are many clients in the market asking for advice on managing their inheritance and discerning between income generation and maximizing wealth. When deciding where to place their inherited sum when it comes to investing, what are the safe havens versus risky sectors?
Sure. So in the current environment, you know, safe havens, short-term treasury bonds certainly have a decent yield, even money market funds earning around 5%. Are certainly a safe haven, although that's not going to be forever. It's very short term, right? As soon as the Fed starts lowering interest rates, that yield will begin to decline. In the United States, you know, we really have a pretty big municipal bond market that's a tax-advantaged type of investment. But for foreign entities, I think even looking at corporate bonds could make sense in terms of looking for a safer asset class. But if you really want something that's going to benefit in a flight to safety sort of environment, I think treasury bonds are a good place to be. In terms of the growth opportunities that are out there, when we look at the broader landscape, we still see opportunity within the equity market. We see less opportunity in U.S. large cap stocks because they have done so well and valuation has become a little bit stretched, although they pulled back a little bit recently. But we see more opportunity in small and mid-cap stocks in the U.S. Internationally, I think, you know, valuation is also quite low, and in some cases, sentiment is also not great, which means there is room for improvement and opportunity there. We personally have a manager that invests a lot in India and still think that India is positioned very favorably for supply chains that are looking for a new home outside of China and think there is a great opportunity for that economy to grow and think there is opportunity there too to invest.
With the geopolitical uncertainties bringing some level of uncertainty into the market, what kind of risk must firms look out for, keeping in mind that 70 to 80% of businesses fail to sell when put in on the market?
Yes, so we've been in an environment, I think, where, you know, anybody who's trying to sell their business or get funding for their business is having a bit of a tough time, geopolitical environment aside. Mm-hmm. But I do think with the geopolitical environment in mind, I think it's really important for investors to stay disciplined. with its equity having run as much as it has in the U.S., especially U.S. large cap stocks, I think staying disciplined and trimming some exposure, of individual stocks that have done well, I think is important. And in, as I spoke of earlier, I think bonds are a perfectly fine investment, especially now, given the, what's the scenario that's being priced in. So absolutely think that, you know, staying disciplined is important, not getting caught up in the hype of wanting to own, you know, only technology stocks or something like that, I think is also important. That's fine if you have that for part of your investment strategy, but if you want to be able to weather market volatility and a potential geopolitical event, I think it's important to have a more balanced approach and have some bonds in your portfolio as well.
That's some great insights there. Thank you very much, Brenda, for your time today.
All right. Thanks so much for having me.
All right. And we've been speaking with Brenda Vingello, the Chief Investment Officer, Sandhill Global Advisors. Stay ahead of us on Money FM 89.3.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance. To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at audio.sg or download the audio app. That's AWEDIO, audio at the App Store and Google Play.